KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
The streets were empty. The city was very clearly preparing for war.
Urspraka, U-R-S-P-R-A-C-H-E, Urspraka, that is correct.
I'd always been aware of burlesque. I never thought I'd do it. It wasn't even... I was a serious modern dancer and an artist. I wasn't... Not that I frowned upon it, but it just didn't seem like me at all.
Ray Gerard, talking about Baghdad preparing for war. We're going to talk to him in a few moments. Mark Kennison, talking about becoming a burlesque dancer. We're going to hear about that a little later in the hour. And a girl from last year's Scripps Spelling Bee, spelling a word. We have our own Spelling Bee of the Air coming up in about 25 minutes. And you know what? It's for you to participate. So, good spellers, I'm going to get four or five of you on the line. We'll have you ready. We'll go over the rules about 9:25, 9:30, and then we will have our Spelling Bee of the Air. You can call now. Get yourself ready to go. 206-543-5869. You confident spellers. Some of the words are easy and then it gets hard. Or 1-866-677-5869. We'd like you to give us a call. 1-800. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong number. 1-800-289-5869. I just did a pledge drive number, didn't I? 1-800-289-5869 or 206-543-5869 to be part of our Spelling Bee of the Air. That's going to start at about 9:30. Let me start right now with the legislature in Washington, D.C., Congress. The government shutdown's been averted. Sequester cuts made more manageable for the directors of agencies. The next step now for Congress to pass a budget. House Republicans today approved a budget blueprint. It's marked by deep spending cuts to social programs, defines Republicans' positions on the new fiscal battles for this year and the 2014 elections. The Senate is doing the same thing, defining their positions and getting ready for battles ahead. Senate is trying to pass its first budget in about 4 years, and leading that effort is Washington State Democratic Senator Patty Murray.
What the budget is actually just a blueprint to the Finance Committee to close tax loopholes to raise $975 billion over the 10-year period. The other part of our blueprint directs committees in the Senate and House to find spending reductions of $975 billion that we divide between defense, non-defense, and health. So it's actually a blueprint that's put forward. And by the way, it's in contrast to what the House Republicans just passed under the Ryan budget. That is an all spending cuts approach that really will devastate programs like Medicare that our seniors count on, that takes away any investments in education, in our jobs that are so important today, in our growth. And continues the sequester that we already know is losing jobs and hurting families across the country. So we take a much more balanced approach to getting to a point of managing our debt and deficit in a responsible way and focusing on jobs and the economy.
You know, Senator Murray, you had some critics saying that you were double counting, the Democrats are double counting the savings that they have in their proposed budget. Why is that wrong?
Well, it's absolutely wrong. budgets are documents that very clearly point out where we get our savings and where we look at revenue. And you can see from looking at our budget that we do indeed get to a point of cutting expenditures in a way that's responsible and increasing revenues. And I know that in the Senate floor, people throw out numbers and throw out baselines and throw out different things, but I'm very confident that our budget is exactly what we have stated to the American people, and it is credible, and I think it's a document that we can be proud of.
Are we going to see any cuts in Social Security in your budget in terms of inflation adjustment or even in terms of raising taxes to help pay for the Social Security benefit?
I'm really glad you asked that because it's a question I get a lot. Actually, Social Security is not part of the nation's budget. It counts differently, so we don't make any reductions to or changes to or any adjustments to Social Security. It comes under to Congress in a different way. Our budget does look at health care spending, which is part of Medicare and entitlements, and we build on the responsible reductions that we've already done to help manage Medicare in the long run, unlike the Ryan plan, which actually says that we are going to voucherize Medicare and weaken the program dramatically very, very quickly in the near future, which I just don't think is what our nation wants us to do.
But when you look at Medicare cuts, when you look at the hospital and health care costs, often those are in the budget, but then when time comes to actually make cuts, the Senate moves away, the Congress moves away. Will they actually come?
Oh, you know, Steve, I hear that all the time. The reductions are real. We are putting together a blueprint for the next 10 years that will put in place the caps that on spending that we have to meet. Obviously, the exact details of that will be written in the future, but these budget caps are very strict, and it would be very difficult for Congress to break those caps.
All right, bottom line, what's your prognosis for getting this passed soon, middle time, later?
Well, I know, because I feel this way, that everybody is tired of how our government is being managed today, crisis to crisis. Oh, we're going to shut down government today, debt ceiling tomorrow, and just how are we going to do this? We've got to get back on a path over the long run that creates stability in this country, and our 10-year approach does that in a responsible, incredible way. The House has passed a Ryan budget I adamantly disagree with. We will pass our budget out of the Senate sometime in the next 2 to 3 days, and then we will try and work. In fact, I'm already talking to Congressman Ryan to find a way to come to an agreement to move this forward and get us out of this crisis management that Congress has fallen into over the last several years.
Really? You and he, you think you have some common ground?
You know, it remains to be seen. I do know, because I chaired the Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction a year ago, that I know that we have to put some serious consideration into compromise and have been willing to do that. What we have not had so far is the Republicans willing to compromise on revenue. If Paul and Ryan can do that and the Republicans can come together on that, yes, I believe we can get there. I think what we'll have after this week is the American people will have a chance to see two very real different approaches to balancing our nation's economy over the next 10 years, and they will have a chance to weigh in, and hopefully we will get the pressure to get this done, because that's what it'll take.
Washington State's senior senator, Patty Murray, leading the effort to pass the Senate's version of a budget, Democrats' version of a budget. We talked about 20 minutes ago, and then as soon as it ended, she was whisked back onto the floor where she is managing that debate. This is Weekday.
I'm Bernard Ouellette. You rely on KUOW to bring you news and information that reflect our world, our nation, our community. And we rely on you. Listener support makes everything you hear on KUOW possible. Right now, your support will help keep our upcoming spring membership drive on target so we can get you back to regular programming sooner. Make your gift online today at KUOW.org and help give the drive a head start. And thanks for your generosity. An Iraqi perspective on the Iraq War 10 years after the invasion, in a minute.
Support for KUOW comes from the UW Medicine Regional Vascular Center at Harborview Medical Center. The Regional Vascular Center team cares for patients with a broad spectrum of circulatory problems involving arteries, veins, and the lymphatic system. More information available at uwmedicine.org/vascular.
41 degrees and mostly cloudy in Seattle. Expect to hit 47 today with perhaps some afternoon thunderstorms. It's 9:14. Burlesque performer Mark Kennison, a.k.a. Waxy Moon, in 35 minutes.
This year we are marking 10 years since the start of the Iraq War. Talking to people who experienced that war firsthand, it's estimated over 100,000 Iraqi civilians lost their lives. That's a low number. That estimate goes up to 1 million from many credible sources. Many Iraqis were hopeful that the removal of Saddam Hussein would bring a life of more opportunity. The aftermath of the war left a lot of instability. It affected many families personally. Ray Girard is currently the communications director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. He lives in the States. He's a citizen now. He's an Iraqi-American blogger, political analyst. He was trained as an architect. And back in 2003, he was living in Jordan, but moved back to Baghdad to be with his family just as the war was about to start.
It was this kind of creepy silence, the calm before the storm. Everyone knew that there is a really big war that will happen. We knew it will happen within a few days. And I think everyone was busy preparing for that war. So although, you know, some people, including myself, went out every couple of nights, you know, to restaurants or to visit friends and family, the streets were empty. The city was very clearly preparing for war.
What are your family members doing? What was your father and mother? What did they do for a living?
Both of my parents are civil engineers, and we own a water treatment company. They took a break, actually, from their company, and we were just, all of us, we were home preparing for war. My duties included putting tape over windows so that when they break, they wouldn't shatter. I hired a contractor to dig a well in our backyard so that if the drinking water you know, supply is bombed, that we would have water from our backyard. I remember my dad was storing fuel. He bought food. He was dealing with, you know, some logistics with our generator. And so everyone had a checklist of tasks that they had to finish before the war starts.
Did that work to dig the well?
It worked. It was actually, everyone did that. It became the thing to do. Baghdad's table water is very shallow, so you have to just dig a few feet and you can get water. So almost everyone who we know dug a well and, you know, inserted a small pump there and a small filtration unit that can run on the generator. But unfortunately, we didn't use any of these things because we had to run out of our home a few days after the war started.
Why?
Our neighborhood was bombed. This one morning, very loud explosives start going around our house, and I run to the roof, and I see bombs just going off within a few hundred feet of our home. So I went downstairs, I told my parents, and then we decided to leave the house and go hide at my uncle's house. Our house was very close to the airport, and that's why it became a major combat zone. So we left everything that we were preparing, or like we prepared for weeks. We just left it. We put two suitcases, two everything that we can put in these two suitcases, and jumped in our cars and just drove off. And there, I remember hearing the noise of bullets going, you know, very close to us, like flying in the air, you know, and explosions and jet fighters. It was like a scene in a movie, you know. And we just drove off and we went to my uncle's house and stayed there for a couple of weeks.
Ray Girard is communications director of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee. He's an Iraqi-American blogger. He co-wrote the book, The Iraq War Blog, an Iraqi family's inside view of the first year of occupation. And in that book, you talk about what that world was like, what that life was like. You know, as civil engineers, that must have been very hard for your parents to see the work of other engineers, perhaps their own work, destroyed.
Correct. And I'm an architect by training, so it was even harder for me. That actually what that's the reason why I started documenting the architectural landmarks that were bombed right after the fall of Baghdad. And then that developed into a larger project of documenting both buildings that were bombed and civilian casualties. I ended up leading the first civilian casualty survey in Iraq, and it counted the number of Iraqi civilians who were killed in the first 100 days of conflict.
You know, you are an architect by training. You established IMAR, the grassroots organization to coordinate political leadership, civil society throughout Iraq, the idea being to rebuild the country's infrastructure. I want to get to what that means in a minute, but boy, you look around at what's missing in the infrastructure physically, and then you look around and what's missing in terms of the people that were there. How does it feel when you are in Iraq today? It seems like you would be walking through ghosts.
You just described my master's thesis, actually. That is exactly what I wanted to work on. How to rebuild the built environment, you know, how to build walls and houses and streets, and at the same time, how to rebuild the civil society. Because the Iraqi civil society was damaged during the two or three decades of dictatorship. And of course, it was damaged even more under the last decade of sectarian politics and divisions inside the community. This was more or less the idea that I wanted to introduce when I worked with IMAR, the organization that I started. Unfortunately, my work and the work of many other architects and engineers didn't go that far because there wasn't a receptive environment in the country. Bringing in qualified professionals who are interested in building the country, rather, most of these positions and jobs and funding went to a partisan groups that are linked to ruling parties or groups that are linked, to the right sectarian affiliation or ethnic affiliation. The last couple of years, there were really some shocking numbers about Iraq's corruption. Iraq was in the top 10 most corrupt countries in the world, according to Transparency International. And this corruption comes because of two reasons. One of them is the traditional sense of corruption, people stealing money and bribes and giving contracts to their families and friends. And the other sense is in Iraq is the legal corruption, and by legal corruption I mean salaries of politicians. So, for example, an average Iraqi gets a couple hundred dollars or maybe $1,000 if they're lucky as a monthly salary. But a politician's salary, like a member of parliament's salary, is more than a U.S. Congress member or senator's salary. They receive $22,000 a month. That's $250,000 a year for their salary, and maybe another $250,000 in benefits. So the gap is really, really shocking. So, I mean, the problem is that there is a gap between those who are involved in the political process and those outside it. And I mean, I found myself, unfortunately, outside it. I wasn't really able to participate in the reconstruction process.
Do you go back to Iraq or Baghdad very often?
I went in the last couple of years. I actually went a few times in 2010 and 2011, and it makes me feel really sad when I go back because, I grew up in Baghdad. As I mentioned, I was born there. Most of the people who I knew in my life lived within 30 minutes of where I lived. So my family and friends and colleagues and co-workers and neighbors. And now when I go to Iraq, believe it or not, I don't have a single person who I know in that country. Not one person. Every single person who I know was either killed or left the country. So my relatives who used to live within 30 minutes away from my house now live all over the world. I have relatives living in Canada and the U.S., relatives living in New Zealand, and relatives living in everywhere in between. It's literally all around the world.
You know,
I
want you to finish, but you said in an interview that your family had moved on from Iraq, and you know that's physically moved on that you just described. Do you feel like the Iraq that you've also moved? Are you just gone? Are you is that state gone? That country gone for you?
You know, I don't know when did that happen or whether it happened already or not. But I live in Washington, D.C., and I am a U.S. citizen. I own a house here, and I just had my first child a few weeks ago, born here in Washington. So, these things just happen with time, and I think a decade after the fall of Baghdad, I just find myself living here with no prospects or plans to move back to Iraq.
You wrote a couple of years ago in your blog, the 10 words I could think of to describe Baghdad are garbage, checkpoints, barbed wire, concrete walls, armored vehicles, flak jackets, bodyguards, personal security detail, corruption, and death. Would you still describe Iraq that way?
Yeah. And maybe one more word, memories.
What's physically from the city, from your memory, what's missing? What was the city like? Was it a vibrant place? And what's gone now from that city?
It's very different. You know, the last time I went, I actually wanted to drive in the neighborhood that I grew up in. My driver went through that neighborhood without me recognizing it, because many of the landmarks that I used to recognize were destroyed. And there are walls surrounding almost every street in Baghdad because of fear of car bombs. So there are these concrete walls all around the streets. You drive for miles and miles and miles. It feels like you're driving in a tunnel because of these concrete walls. I can't really recognize where I am anymore. I don't recognize the people. I don't recognize the city. It's like a strange place for me, you know? And I remember my last visit, I had this really like a hard experience, because after living in the U.S. for a long time, you know, and just remembering Baghdad with all of these nice memories about how I grew up, how, you know, like I want to go for a visit. And then when I actually go for a visit, I come to realize that I don't really know this place. And the place that I imagine doesn't really exist anymore. So it wasn't very, very, very easy for me to actually go and experience that firsthand. I know other people told me that. They said, do not go back, you know, just live there with your good memories. But I didn't listen to them.
Live there with your good memories. That's interesting, isn't it, to think of that we have to leave our country and our place and just have the memory instead. Bitter? Are you angry? Are you sad? All those things, I imagine.
I mean, I think I went through different stages at different times. Like just the definition of my country has shifted as well, you know, because, the U.S. is my country as well now, and I care about the U.S. a lot. I spent, you know, like 7 or 8 years of my life here so far. And the same way that I cared about Iraq or I cared about Palestine, which is where my father is from, I feel like, you know, I have a new country now that I belong to. So it's like a bittersweet feeling, you know, like I do miss Iraq. But I was among the more fortunate people who are not stuck in some refugee camp. You know, I have a home and it's called the United States. Other people are living in some, shack somewhere or some tent and just dreaming about the home that they once had in Iraq.
Are you conflicted at all about the fact that you called this United States also your home, and the United States was responsible for the destruction of Baghdad, for whatever political reasons, for whatever reason? The United States was responsible for the destruction?
Yes. Yes. I think it's one of the ironies of my life that I took refuge in the country that destroyed my homeland. In many cases, I saw the irony. I understand the difference between, the United States as a country and the U.S. Foreign policy and what the U.S. does around the world. But it is there, It's like I had two hard issues to deal with when I came to the U.S. One of them was this feeling that, I am coming to the United States to become an American and a citizen of this nation. At the same time, I did feel bad about what the U.S. did to Iraq, and I continue to feel bad about that. It's not very easy to reconcile. And the other feeling was when I used to meet with U.S. troops and veterans, it wasn't easy for me to actually hang out with a veteran or a U.S. soldier. Because I didn't see them as friends or like fellow citizens. I saw them the same way that I saw them in Baghdad. People who invaded my neighborhood in a tank. I wasn't a big fan of that. So it took me a while until I ended up reconciling some of these issues. And now I have friends who are veterans. Many of them actually are very good friends of mine. We agree on so many, even political issues. there are so many contradictions, I think, with the fact that many Iraqis ended up immigrating from Iraq to the United States and having the U.S. as their new homeland.
Remembering the beginnings and the aftermaths of the Iraq War. Ray Girard is communications director now of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. He co-wrote the book, The Iraq War Blog, an Iraqi family's inside view of the first year of occupation. Felix Bonnell, who's coming in a moment, reminded me that we canceled our spelling bee of the year 10 years ago because it conflicted with the start of the Iraq War. But today we're going to have it. And so, coming up, if you would like to be a participant in our Spelling Bee of the Air, we would like you to be a participant. So call 206-543-5869 right now. You just have a couple of minutes to get on the phone, and then you're going to spell. What is more fun than spelling? 1-800-289-5869. Are you ticking off the things that are more fun than spelling? Well, spelling's at the top of your list. That's you. 1-800-289-5869, 206-543-5869. Our Spelling Bee of the Air coming up in a minute and a half.
It's 9:32, and how do you spell Seattle Public Radio? KUOW, of course.
Support for KUOW comes from A24, presenting the film Ginger and Rosa, directed by Sally Potter, starring Elle Fanning, Christina Hendricks, and Annette Bening, opens March 22nd.
The writer and actress Tina Fey says she didn't really plan to morph into a romantic comedy star.
When they put up the sign-up sheet of who wants to star in what movie, a lot of times I get there late. I was like, oh, I want to sign up for Catwoman. And then Anne Hathaway had already signed up for it.
I'm Steve Inskeep. Tina Fey talks about her new movie, Admission, on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Tina Fey, tomorrow on KUOW's Morning News Magazine, which airs from 4 to 9 a.m.
Support for KUOW comes from the Seattle Sounders FC. The Sounders FC have advanced to the semifinal round of the CONCACAF Champions League, where they'll renew their rivalry with Mexico's Santos Laguna, Tuesday, April 2nd at CenturyLink Field. Ticket information is at soundersfc.com.
All right, our spelling bee is just a moment away, but first a quick look at today's weather. Scattered showers, maybe some afternoon thunderstorms, and a high of 47. Currently in Seattle, 42 degrees. So that's what springtime feels like this year. But what is the sound of springtime in the Puget Sound region? Strictly sunshine and butterflies, right? Maybe not. The sounds of the season in 25 minutes.
What does a butterfly sound like? All right. Are you ready? This weekend is the regional spelling bee for King and Snohomish County students. The teen winner goes on to win. The teen winner goes on to compete in the Nationals in Washington, D.C. So you ask yourself, can I participate? Yes, you can. I think we have enough time. What do we think? About five participants? Six participants? What do you think? We have four right now, Felix.
It's going to be hard to weed out those several hundred callers down to just four or five, but if we can do that, that's probably the best way to do it.
I think we should go for two more, yeah. So, all right, look, we have two more slots because Kathy, Jolie, Kelly, and Merritt are ready, but we have two more slots for our Spelling Bee of the Air, our annual. I don't know, how many years have we done this? 150?
Started doing this in 1999.
Good grief.
Yeah.
So, yet, except for the hiatus, that's a lot of years.
Yep.
And Felix Bunnell, writer, producer, you listen to the KUW series, this Not Just In. He is also the, and he does old time radio and new radio.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a jack of all trades. He is also the official reader for the regional spelling bee for King and Snohomish County, which is taking place this weekend. That's a tough job you have, by the way.
You know, it's not as tough as what the kids have to do. They have to memorize all this stuff. I have a list in front of me with words on it. It's not tough.
You know who had a tough job last year and rose to the occasion? Camille Murphy, last year's regional winner of the Scripps National Spelling Bee. Good to see you.
Hi.
Hi. Are you, and you're competing again?
Yes, I'm competing again because I just won my school spelling bee.
Wow. When did you decide you were going to be a speller extraordinaire?
Well, I think in sixth grade, I got second place in my school spelling bee, so I guess I wanted to come back and win, and then it just happened that I won the regional one, too.
Ah, you have a competitive spirit.
Yeah.
What do you mean it just happened you won the regional? It just didn't happen. You worked hard.
Well, I'd studied a lot, except I didn't really expect to win because I guess I underestimated myself.
Do you remember what the word was to put you over the top?
Well, the first word was putrescible, and then my winning word was dystopia.
Putrescible. That's an odd word to choose. Can you put that in a sentence? Putrescible. Uh-huh. Do you know what it means?
I have it here in front of me.
It's
putrescent,
right?
Yeah, it's an adjective. It means likely to become rotten.
Nice. Nice. Putrescible. That's what happens in dystopias. Things become putrescible. All right, so give me an example of what you're doing this year to, you know, take it all the way. How have you upped your game?
I've been like studying the lists as usual, except I've also been looking up harder words in like the dictionary and online so I can prepare more.
Has this made you a more interested reader, being a speller?
I believe so because when I look in books, I always look for new words I can memorize and spell.
That's great. All right, people. Camille, as role model? Returning champion. She's going to be here. She's going to be listening. We're going to get some color commentary from you as well, Camille. And all right, remind us, Felix, how this is working.
Well, we'll take one caller at a time. We'll give them a word. We'll ask them to say the word, to spell the word, and then say the word again so we know that we're spelling, know that they're finished, excuse me. They can ask me for a definition, a sentence, part of speech, language of origin. Just like in the real bee on Sunday and like last year, my job is to help them, give them as much information as possible about the word so they know what they're being asked to spell. It's a real tricky thing, but I know nobody at home is going to be cheating with any kind of a device at
no,
we don't even need to say
happen.
That on KUW.
No.
I mean, come on. It's insulting.
This is about bragging rights.
Yeah.
We may have a book and a tchotchke for the winner, but
excellent.
Mostly it's about bragging rights.
Excellent.
And you competed.
And selfishly, it's a warm-up for me. This is I'm completely serious. This really warms me up for what I have to do on Sunday to pronounce all the words properly and then remember what all these different diacritic marks mean and everything. So I'm very happy to be here to be able to do this to warm up.
All right. My job is to make sure I don't hang up on anybody. So if I do, you call back because we have competing Kathy, Jolie, Kelly, Merritt, Yvonne, and Katrina. In that order, we will go because why not? So we will start with Kathy. Kathy, hello.
Hi there.
It's good to talk to you. We'll be just like Jeopardy. I'll get your bios in a moment, but we'll start spelling right away.
And we are using words from last year's list, so these might sound familiar to Camille. We'll see. First word on the list is credible.
credible. Could you give me a definition?
Credible is an adjective, worthy of belief.
Okay. Credible. C-R-E-D-I-B-L-E.
And then say the word one more time so we know you're
credible.
Finished. That is correct.
Goody.
Very good. All right. Hang on. Now we're going to Jolie. Is it Jolie? Is that correct?
Like roly-poly Jolie.
Like what?
Like roly-poly Jolie.
Oh, roly-poly Jolie. That's very good.
Oh, I should say that, you know, if they spell the word correctly, I'll say that's correct. If it's spelled incorrectly, they'll hear this sound. So, all right.
So the bell counterintuitively means incorrect.
Exactly. Okay. The second word in round one is giraffe.
Giraffe. G-I-R-R-A-F-E. Wait, hold on a second. Giraffe, either two R's or two F's. G-I-R-A-F-F-E. G-I-R-R-A-F-E.
I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
So I'm having to think it through. Okay, it's G-I-R-R-A-F-E, giraffe.
I'm sorry, the correct spelling of giraffe is G-I-R-A-F-F-E. One of the rules of the spelling bee, say you spelled it incorrectly, then you went back and spelled it correctly, you'd still would lose because once you say the word order, you can't go back and change it in the official rules, which we try to follow. So
we try to. All right, Jolie, I'm sorry. That was a good. That giraffe is tough. I appreciate that. All right. All right. See, this is we're hard.
This is great. I mean, this is great practice for me. I don't know if it makes good radio. I hope it does.
Well, I think we all know how to spell giraffe now. That was a tough one. All right, Kelly. Kelly's ready to go.
All right. The word is karate.
Karate. K-A-R-A-T-E. Karate.
That is correct.
Good. Very good. Now we are going to Merritt. Hello, Merritt.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. And this word is a homonym, which I'm obliged to tell you that fact as before I tell you the word. The word is aria.
Aria. Could you define it, please?
It's a noun. It's a melody, specifically an accompanied, extended, and usually elaborate melody sung by a single voice, as in an opera or oratorio.
Okay. Aria. A-R-I-A. Aria.
That is correct.
All right, good. You hang on. Now we're on to Yvonne. Hello, Yvonne.
Hi there.
Hi there.
All right, the word is newfangled.
Newfangled. N-E-W... F-A-N-G-L-E-D.
That is correct.
Newfangled.
Very good. May I ask a question at this point? Newfangled, I sometimes see that hyphenated. So is that incorrect, the hyphen?
Does need to be hyphenated according to Webster's Third Dictionary. It's not a compound word, or it's a compound word. There's no hyphen required.
Newfangled.
Yep.
All right. That's good. If she'd put a hyphen in there, that would have been incorrect? Or would we have to go to the judges?
Well, I'd probably go to the judges, but since I'm the judge here today, I would probably say that was incorrect. Typically, I mean, no words in the B that have any punctuation
associated
with it.
There you go. That's a good thing to know. All right. So, Merritt has made it. Yvonne's made it. We're going to get the last in the first round here, and that's Katrina. Hello, Katrina.
Hi.
All right. The last word in round one is gazelle.
Gazelle. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Gazelle.
That is correct.
Very good. All right. Now, what do we have here? We get to go to, I seem to have lost my paperwork. We get to go to 9:50. So we got a little time. We got another round.
Yeah.
Easily. You're going to crank it up
I'm
a little bit?
Crank it way up. Yeah.
Those were easy. Give me your thoughts, Camille, on that first round. How do you think the contestants did?
I think they did pretty good. I mean, I could spell all those words, but, you know.
You've been practicing.
Yeah.
Any tips you have as we go into a second round of harder words? Any tips about how people should think about when they first hear that word?
I'd say just think it through more and probably ask the language of origin because it really helps.
Oh, ask the language. Very good. Very good. Ask the language of origin. All right, Kathy. Kathy, we have two folks from Bellingham here, so... what do you think? Bellingham is a town that cares about its spelling. I think that's fair to say, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
What do you do when you're not doing a spelling bee?
I write novels.
Excellent. You are a wordsmith. All right.
I try to be.
Yes.
All right, so we've gone from about word number 35 up to word 236.
Oh, my.
For those following along with their lists at home. It's first word in round two is bromeliad.
Oh, my goodness. Bromeliad? Could you put that in a sentence, please?
Jerry was surprised to learn that Spanish moss is a bromeliad.
Oh, okay, here we go. Bromeliad. B-R-O-M-E-L-I-A-D. Bromeliad.
That is correct.
Very good.
Goody.
See, because you're a wordsmith. All right, hang on. Hang on here. Now we're going to Kelly. Hello, Kelly.
Hello.
Kelly, what do you do when you're not doing spelling bees on Bainbridge?
I'm a graphic designer.
Oh, so you get time to contemplate and think about words.
Yeah, I got nothing but time.
Just when you thought the words couldn't get any harder, your word is sharpoy.
Sharpoy? Could you tell me how to spell it?
You know, I almost started to spell it. That was a good one. You almost tricked me.
Could you tell me the origin of it?
This word is from a word that went from Persian to Hindi.
Can you use it in a sentence? Can I ask for that? Can you use it in a sentence?
Sure. Myra found the sharpoy and feather mattress in her hotel room surprisingly comfortable.
I guess I'll go C-H-A-R-P-O-I, sharpoy.
You were very close. It's C-H-A-R-P-O-Y.
Okay.
C-H-A-R-P-O-Y, sharpoy.
Sharpoy.
See, this is where I start to question the spelling bee. A, have you ever heard that word?
Come yes,
are
I
you,
have.
In spelling or in reading?
Spelling.
All right. Yes. All right. Have you ever heard that word before, Kelly? I don't think I've ever heard it before.
One of Kathy's novels might have a character who goes to India and goes to sleep on a sharpoy, I don't know what it is exactly. But.
We will all be looking up sharpoy. All right, Kelly, back to the graphic designing. I appreciate you doing that. This gets tough. He was done. He was done with us already. All right. Merritt, after hearing that word, I know you're ready to go.
A little scared, okay.
Ersatz.
Ersatz. E-R-S-A-T-Z. Ersatz.
That is correct.
Very good. Very good. All right, hang on. Now we're going to... Oh, I didn't ask Merritt. I'll come around next time, Merritt. Yvonne, what do you do in Tacoma?
I just published a book, so I'm doing book talks.
Excellent. What's the name of your book?
Shaking Shame from Mental Illness.
All right. Good. Good.
All
now
right.
We're ready.
So this is word number four in round two is asana.
Say it again, please.
Asana.
Asana. Asana. O-S-I-N-A. Asana.
I'm sorry, the correct spelling of asana, which looks like you'd say it asana, personally, but I'm going by the diacritic marks, A-S-A-N-A.
And what is
asana.
It? What does it mean?
It's a noun, a manner of sitting, as in the practice of yoga, posture.
Oh.
Asana.
All right, Yvonne, thank you. Keep writing. I appreciate that. We're making it tough. I admit it. We're making it tough. Katrina in Bellingham. How you doing? What do you do up in Bellingham, Katrina?
I'm also a graphic designer.
Oh, we got authors and graphic designers. I love that. All right.
The word is paradigm.
Paradigm? Paradigm. P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M. Paradigm.
That is correct.
Why not two nickels? All right. Hang on. That was very good. All right. So here we are. We got three contestants left. Got a couple of minutes. Where are you going now?
I think I should jump way up. I guess I better jump
Oh,
way
man,
up.
He's going to go. We are like right into the deep end of the pool here.
We should jump, not the secret words at the end of the list, but the published words from last year. Okay.
All right.
Okay. All right.
All right, Kathy Bellingham, you ready?
As best I can be.
Sarsaparilla.
Sarsaparilla. Could you tell me about, is it a noun?
It's a noun, yes.
Could you use it in a sentence?
Zach found a lunch counter that had sarsaparilla on its menu.
Okay, I'm thinking of old westerns when you say that word. So I'm going to give it a try here. Sarsaparilla S-A-R-S-A-P-A-R-I-L-L-A.
That is correct.
Okay, good.
It's a weird word. It looks like it's sarsaparilla, right?
Yeah,
but it's
right.
Sarsaparilla. Those are the toughest words in the B, the ones that sound very different than how they're actually spelled.
I would have gotten that one wrong.
Yeah.
Clearly. All right. Merritt, what do you do in Stewart Park?
I'm an antiques and collectibles dealer, and I conduct estate sales.
Great. All right.
Okay, the word is perestroika.
Perestroika. P-E-R-E-S-T-R-O-I-K-A. Perestroika.
That is correct.
Very good. People are, this is excellent. This is a tough round here.
Do you have three prize packages available?
If we have to. Let's see what Katrina's got in Bellingham.
Commissar.
Can you say that again?
Commissar.
Okay. Commissar. C-O-M-M-I-S-S-A-R. Commissar.
That is correct.
All right. We got three. All right. That's very good. I'll tell you what we'll do. Should we just, because in the interest of it feels so good, and you, those were tough words, let's say we succeeded in our spelling bee. We could have three winners, but I just think folks did an excellent job.
Yeah, those writers and graphic designers and stuff.
They know their stuff. Yeah. All right, you folks, hang on, and we'll call it a good. That was good. I thought that was pretty good. What do you think, Camille Murphy, as the expert here?
Yeah, I think it was really good.
Yeah. Sarsaparilla, commissar, perestroika.
Tough.
Very good. Very good. All right. Now then, Felix Bunnell is writer and producer of the KUOW series It's Not Just In. He's the official reader for the regional spelling bee for King and Snohomish County. Camille Murphy, last year's regional winner, will be competing again. Where is the bee this year? Is it back at Town Hall?
It's at Town Hall. It's also live on the Seattle Channel on Cable 21 in the city and streaming at seattlechannel.org, so anyone can see it all over the world.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Yep.
And what time does it start?
1 p.m.
1 p.m. Sundays. Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for competing. You folks, hang on. We'll get your addresses. We'll send you prizes. This is Weekday. We're going from spelling to burlesque. Modern burlesque performers, they owe a lot to strippers, also acts of the early and mid-20th century, and they also owe a lot to dance. Marcy Silman is here to talk about Waxy Moon.
Waxy Moon. Next Wednesday night, the Kings of Boylesque are coming to the Triple Door in downtown Seattle. Boylesque, pretty obvious. It's boys who do burlesque, and burlesque can be anything. It could be just sort of pushing the envelope. But it also could be stripping, and Waxy Moon is the king of male strippers, at least as far as Seattle goes. His name's Mark Kennison. He created this character of Waxy about 7 years ago. He was working at Washington Ensemble Theater, which he helped found when he was a student at the Professional Actors Training Program, a graduate MFA program at the University of Washington. Before that, Mark Kennison is a Juilliard-trained dancer, performed and toured the world with the Jose Limon Dance Company. And with Waxy Moon, it's taking the theater background, melding it with that classical dance training and creating something totally new. But this wasn't at all what he'd planned on doing. Washington Ensemble Theater was a collective. They were working super hard, and he was just really burned out. And he went to see a friend from New York, a woman who goes by the burlesque name of Dirty Martini. And then this is what happened.
I'd always been aware of burlesque. I never thought I'd do it. It wasn't even... I was a serious modern dancer and an artist. I wasn't, not that I frowned upon it, but it just didn't seem like me at all.
Because you were this classically trained guy.
Yeah, I was a classically trained guy, and I was performing in serious concert dance.
So you just wanted to blow off some steam, and you thought, well, I'm, I, oh, look, there's a burlesque class.
Exactly. So I had been made aware of the Academy through her when she was in town, and I saw her perform, and it blew my mind. She's a small woman. She's a voluptuous woman, but she's not tall. And she came out on stage, and she looked like she was 10 feet tall. And I thought, my God, Meryl Streep could learn how to hold stage from someone like that. That kind of exuding, that kind of presence was really inspiring to me, and it got me excited by the form. So that was in my mind. A couple months later, I enrolled in the six-week course where the persona of Waxy Moon was born, and I was introduced by Miss Indigo Blue to the tools and history of burlesque.
I'll just ask about the name, because I had read that it's essentially you appropriating a negative review.
Oh, the name Waxy Moon comes from that time when I was in that theater company. A local reviewer called me Waxy, and it was derogatory. It was saying I was wax-like or something. And it kind of stuck with me, but I thought, I'm going to take ownership of it, take it on, and make it something encouraging and positive.
How long ago?
This is the fall of 2006.
The history, I want to go back to that idea of the history of burlesque, because it is, well, it has a wild history, because it's been around for a while, but it was always that kind of down and dirty, and at some points, dirty, not arty at all, right?
Yeah, it's always been considered tawdry and lowbrow. It has a very challenging history. It was meant for the masses, maybe dancers that weren't in first-rate shows might find their way to the burlesque stage. Many of them were sex workers. It's tawdry.
I can't remember who I read this of. It was somebody here who said, essentially, burlesque is you come in with a lot of clothes and you go off with less. Something.
Yeah,
something
I like that description of it. And I find great comfort in that. I like that, the limitations of that. I think sometimes as a creative artist, if I'm left to my own devices, I feel like I'm swimming and stuff. But if I use that as my structure, I really, really like it. I go onto the stage, something happens, I leave the stage with less clothing.
At its most simplistic.
Yes. So and then what are the exciting possibilities within that? How far can I take that? How can I bring all these years of stagecraft and movement to this considered lowbrow form?
A six-week class it was initially?
Yeah, 6 weeks.
So does one have a talent for this? Were you particularly talented at it? I mean, what was it that you realized this is it?
I don't know that I was particularly talented at it. I was encouraged by my teacher, by Miss Indigo Blue, and I really liked it, and it felt right. I don't know how to say more than that, but it felt like the right thing at the right time, and so I left Washington Ensemble Theater, the company and the colleagues that I loved, co-founded, thought I would never leave. 6 months later, I was like, you guys, I'm going to branch out on my own and explore this persona and explore this art form.
And their response was?
They were very supportive. They got it. They had seen me do some stuff, and they understood.
This isn't for listeners who imagine a drag performance. Waxy isn't that. This is, you're not trying to be like a Judy Garland impersonator or even in that beautiful red dress, you are not Vivian Leigh. You are identifiable as male underneath that.
Yeah, I've never I don't make a great drag queen. Something about these features doesn't suit it. And what does seem to suit it is embracing my maleness and not denying my maleness and kind of bringing together my maleness and my stereotypically female behavior as well.
The theater trained part of you, there isn't a lot of text in things I've seen, but you are creating, this is an alter ego. This isn't you, Mark, this is you, Waxy, that we see.
Yeah, it's a vivid character and a very specific character to me.
Who is Waxy?
I call Waxy a gender-blending, queer lady, boylesque performance art solo stripping sensation. I think that covers it. And it's interesting, I don't use drag in that. Drag is an element, and I love the artifice of drag, and I love the safety that that mask and makeup allows me to put forth. But it's something different. I'm like a weird uncle in the drag community.
Does Waxy use a he or a she pronoun?
I welcome both, and I like that it confuses people, and I'm interchangeable.
Mark Kennison on stage as Waxy Moon, speaking with KUOW's Marcy Silman. You can see Waxy, a host of male burlesque performers, tonight at the Triple Door in Kings, a Boylesque extravaganza. Doors open 7 p.m. You can also find a link to what they're doing at our website, Facebook page, Weekday on KUOW. Stay with us. Dow Constantine, radio retrospective, and a lunch recommendation, all coming up.
Ten a.m. A deadly car bombing today in a refugee camp in Pakistan. That's in the news in a minute. KUOWF. Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.